News Radio 1180 WHAM proudly welcomes you to Sound Bites. This is America's longest-running computer show. Call the show now, 222-1180. The Choice One toll-free line, 1-800-295-1180. Or Star 1180, a free call for Verizon Wireless subscribers. Now, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on News Radio 1180 WHAM.
Good morning, Mr. and Mrs. America, and all the chips in the PC. It is Sunday, the 19th of June, Anno Domini 2005, and you lucky people, you're listening to Sound Bites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Brendan Cooper.
Brendan Cooper is in for Rob Linton, who's sleeping off hard work, I'm sure, yesterday.
Oh, yeah.
And so he's home all snug as a bug in a rug. Happy Father's Day.
Yeah, I've got to say happy Father's Day to even my dad. Matter of fact, I didn't get a chance to go. They were taking my dad out to breakfast this morning. I didn't get a chance to go because of the timing issue. But
sure.
I wanted to wish him over the airwaves happy Father's Day and talk to him later.
Perfect. And it is also Juneteenth, so happy Juneteenth. And we'll be doing all the stuff we normally do here on Sound Bites, taking people's phone calls and talking about some interesting stuff. And we're going to start with an announcement from Dave.
Yeah.
A real announcement this time.
Well, it's a sad one.
It is
sad. Most of you folks read in the newspaper. You know, what it basically is, folks, is Donuts Delight, like I said before, was closing. Now they officially came out. And announced as of June 30th.
Next week.
Next week or the week after, they'll be closing their doors for good. And it's really a shame because, as a matter of fact, I was talking to Mike's dad, the original, you know, guy that started Donuts Delight. It's a craft that's gone by the wayside. You know, just like a lot of other things, we were talking about how downtown Sibley's is gone, McCurdy's is gone, all the, you know, W.T. Grant and Woolworths. I mean, all those old-time stores and the way people used to care and do things. And it's really sad. Because, as a matter of fact, as I was picking up the donuts today, they were literally back there turning them by hand. It's not like a lot of other places that, you know, they come and get them frozen and everything else. Mike and his dad literally make them, you know, Mike's over there at 2 o'clock in the morning, sitting there getting the dough ready and everything else. So when they open, they're fresh, and they make them right there on site. Because, like I say, as I was, you know, picking him up, he's back there turning with the stick, watching him sitting there turning them by hand.
Well, you know, it's happening in every industry, and in the computer industry, it's much the same thing.
Yeah.
It's essentially an outsourcing issue. You know, a lot of people are getting outsourced now. A lot of stuff is going to the either overseas or whatever.
You call help. And you're not getting help here in the U.S., even though Dell touts, oh, you get 24/7 support. Yeah, it's someplace over in India.
Right. Well, it's about midnight here. It's noon there. So.
Right. Yeah, but you know,
have you seen that fake picture going around the Internet about why PCs are so cheap? And it's the poor natives dressed in loincloths, huddling in a hut, pounding motherboards together with rocks.
Yeah. But no, it's true. I mean, you know, I know we can't always look back, you know, and, you know, sometimes you yearn for the older days and that, but sometimes some of that older stuff was better, and the personal care and everything else. And like you say, just even in our era, you know, computers, which aren't really that old.
Right.
You know, I mean, even that's been outsourced or so cheap and everything else.
Well, we've talked about this, about the fact that, for example, when I sold computers back, you know, 100 years ago, we had a 40% profit margin.
In the glory days.
Mm-hmm.
In the glory
average
days.
Computer system was $10,000. Computer, monitor, printer, software.
Yep.
And you have 40%
margin. And you didn't have...
We had a 40% margin. We could live on that. Easy.
Yeah.
You know, but
today,
nowadays, what do you guys get? 2% if you're lucky?
Yeah, 2%, and the average system is $1,000.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Right.
Yeah, it's very hard, and you know...
We work hard for our 20 bucks.
Yeah.
If that...
It's true. It's true. Think about all the... Hey, for you folks out there, think about all the support you get, all the service you get from your vendor. They're making 20 bucks. You know, it's a lot of stuff you get for 20 bucks. Look, we're going to go to the phones now. We're going to start with Frank. Frank, where are you calling from?
Rochester.
Rochester, what's your question?
I have Norton 2005 antivirus. Mm-hmm. I ran it yesterday, no problems. Then I disabled it, and I ran the AVG, and I found a Trojan horse that Norton didn't find, so I just wanted to let you know about that.
Yeah, that happens. I see it a lot with Norton.
It's usually a difference in when the antivirus updates are put out.
Right.
Norton puts out updates every week, is it?
Yeah.
Unless there's something really, really, really bad, then they put out an update now.
Can I ask,
of the smaller companies will put out updates more often.
One other thing, though, Frank.
Yes.
Why you got two antivirus softwares on there?
Well, I just wanted to try it.
The person didn't do it.
Yeah, but to see what happens. Yeah.
But no. He could be causing his own problem.
Well, yeah.
Because you've got two on there, that can confuse Norton.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, like a lot of things, you know, maybe one is good, two is better, you know, especially in spyware cleanup. But when it comes to antivirus software, no, you only need one.
In fact, you
got to pick one or the other because, yeah, your Norton might have not have caught it, and AVG did, but AVG might have already known about it. It disabled it, so when you ran your Norton, it didn't know about it.
Right.
And also, sometimes the definition patterns inside an antivirus program and things it looks for get false positives from another antivirus program. It sees that pattern and thinks there's a virus when it's really the other program's searching fields.
Yeah.
Now, if only one of them is running in the background and you run the others just to search the hard drive, that's at least a little better.
Yeah,
that's what I did. One was Norton, I disabled completely and then ran the AVG.
But no, even though you disable it down there, it's still a TSR and it's still doing some things in the background.
So I can get away with just doing the AVG, and I can dump my Norton once it expires, right?
Yeah. But only
I like AVG. I'm running it right now in point of fact. I'm soaking in it.
Is there any advantage to doing the Pro versus the free one?
Yes. The Pro gives you a couple of features that you don't have on the free one, like, for example, certain automated updates, a bunch of automated things.
Mm-hmm.
You can read about it on their website at grisoft.com. They actually have a little section that says, you know, what you get for your money. And there are some pretty decent features. So if you prefer to drive a stick, then the free version is completely adequate. But if you like an automatic, then in all likelihood you'll be better off with the Pro version.
Well, thank you very much.
No, thank you very much, Frank. We appreciate the call. And let's put this in perspective. The guy's running an antivirus. He's already ahead of the game. Let's not worry about that. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be back on the other side of that break with Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, with Brendan Cooper, ably putting himself in front of us as if we were just normal human beings. So he'll learn. And me, Nick Francesco, will be back very shortly with the greatest computer show in the known universe. And you all know what that show is. Yes, it's this one, Soundbites. On 1180 WHAM.
When Michael from PCs to Macs, these guys can answer your questions. Back to more Soundbites on News Radio 1180 WHAM.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm still Brendan Cooper.
Still? Unbelievable.
It works.
Good to have a sense of identity in this day and age. And this is Soundbites. And our next caller, Bruce from Henrietta. Bruce, how have you been?
I'm hanging in there, guys. Happy Father's Day.
Thank you. You too.
I got a question for a Mac and PC.
Okay.
Activity. I'm using a crossover cable between a Mac running 10.3.9 to a PC running Windows 2000 workstation. I can see everything on the Mac except external volumes when I'm on the PC and vice versa.
That's a limitation in Samba. The Windows file sharing, which is a Unix program called Samba, only shares your internal drive by default. You have to edit the Samba Etsy file to get it to share external volumes. I don't remember what those edits are offhand. I watched someone do it once.
Many moon ago.
Yeah.
Okay, so Samba.
Yeah, you dig around the internet for it's probably samba.org, Samba project, and there should be something in there on how to enable sharing of external drives.
Okay, and it's spelled like the dance?
Yep. S-A-M-B-A.
Okay.
Not to be confused with Tango.
Right.
But Samba is the product. Windows has its own method, the system message block, or SMB, that is how they connect machines together to do networking. And, of course, they let the rest of the world out, so a bunch of folks created the Samba project, S-A-M-B-A, right, S-M-B, Samba, to open source, basically an open source suite that provides the same file and print services that Windows provides, and it interacts with Windows. So that's the product you need, and it needs to be, and as Steve said, by default it only does internal drives because that's all most people have, and that way it prevents an error. But if you have external drives, you've got to just go into the setup and change that, and there's all kinds of how-tos on the website.
Okay, great.
Stuff.
Thanks, guys.
And like the forums you can post to if you can't find what you're looking for.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Yeah, so yeah, Samba is used in most of the Unix layers to connect to a Windows server. It's every platform developed their own file sharing network.
Right.
Unix was NFS, and Windows is SMB, mm-hmm. and Mac is AFP.
Right.
So the Mac has sort of included all of them now. So OS X will do NFS and SMB and talk to both other sides. And then Samba for Unix lets it talk to Windows, and Windows pretty much doesn't care about anybody else.
Right.
Exactly.
Right. But you can talk to them from the other direction.
Right.
And then Samba is available for Windows and stuff like that. Too.
There is a company called Thursby that makes a program called PC Talk that puts the AFP protocols in Windows. So if you're putting one Mac on a whole bunch of Windows machines, then you put Windows networking on your Mac. And if you're putting one PC in a whole bunch of Mac machines, and you put Apple networking on the Windows.
Right, Do they still use Apple Talk at all?
Some printers are still using Apple Talk, but mostly it's going
over
to IP.
Back in the old days,
the problem with Apple Talk is it's so chatty; it just fills up the network.
What's very interesting is that one of the premier advantages of Apple Talk is the network discovery. You plug a printer in, and the printer says, "Hi, I'm here," and any computer on the network can find it.
Yeah, but it never stops saying that. That's right. Part of the problem.
Couldn't shut it up.
So now what we're seeing in the IP world is the zero config protocol that Apple calls Bonjour.
Right.
So that when you plug an IP printer into your network, it says, "Hi, I'm here."
Right. But it does it at a set pace.
Yeah.
So that it's not constantly screaming over the network. Our next caller is Mike from Pittsburgh, New York. Welcome, Mike. What's your question?
Hi. I'm having trouble connecting to my wireless network at home with a brand-new computer, like 3 days old, that we just got configured for my son's college.
Mm-hmm.
And I've already disabled the default firewall that it came with it. And when I try to connect to the wireless connection, which I've worked with other laptops, I can't seem to get on. It has an 11BG wireless LAN mini PCI adapter built in. And when it says it's not connected. And when I try to connect, it said Windows cannot configure this wireless connection.
Have you gone into the settings in the control panel under networking for that wireless card and make sure that it doesn't have any of the school settings still set up in it?
It might.
A gateway.
Yep.
It might have had a gateway and a couple DNSs set up in it.
It's an IBM ThinkPad, I should go to settings, control panel.
And
in under networking, select that wireless card. Make sure some of the settings for the school aren't still set up in that wireless card.
Write down everything that is set there so he can change it back to that when he goes back to school.
Also, make sure that it is set up correctly, because if the error message is that Windows can't configure it, what it sounds to me like is that you don't have the right drivers installed. Make sure, because if it's a ThinkPad, they've got a very special and separate and different set of drivers than what is installed with standard Windows. We got to take a break back.
Also, that the card is turned on.
Yes. Make sure the card is actually turned on. Back shortly with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Brendan Cooper, me, Nick Francesco, on the greatest computer show in the known universe, Soundbites on 1180 WHAM.
America's longest-running computer show. Back to more Soundbites with Nick, Dave, and Steve on News Radio 1180 WHAM.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Brendan Cooper.
And this is Soundbites. Now, before we go anywhere, I need to mention today is a very important day. I mean, aside from the fact that, you know, it's the anniversary of the first women's right convention in Seneca Falls and all of those things. All right, I mean, those are important. But today is the day in 1954 we first saw the Tasmanian Devil in a Bugs Bunny short. I think that's important. It's the birthday of Blaise Pascal.
Pascal programming.
The mathematician. And, of course, it is the birthday of Mo Howard.
Oh, your favorite.
Stooges.
Yes.
Absolutely. And I think it's important that we mention that. All right. Thank you. I feel better now. Ah, okay.
And what's your tagline you use on your email?
I have Curly's body, Larry's hairline, and Moe's attitude.
I am the three stooges.
All right. Our next caller is Roger from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Roger. What's your question?
Good morning, guys. Happy Father's Day.
Thank you. You too.
I have Windows Media 10. I have all of the latest updates. Everything is absolutely up to snuff. However, when I put music into a particular library, every once in a while, for absolutely no reason, it all disappears.
Isn't it?
And I don't understand that. And then there's something that says, well, it says, for more information, click here. Well, then it puts me on the Microsoft website, and it says, well, it could be that a server is down or some kind of nonsense like that. First of all, I never use the Internet for music. Never did, never will. What the music I have is paid-for CDs, and I put them on a external hard drive just so I don't have to monkey around changing them. And that's as far as it goes, and I set up a library, and every once in a while, for absolutely no reason, it just disappears. Cannot find it.
Does it ever come back?
No. No. I got to reload it.
It sounds like...
Yeah.
And I don't understand that. It just doesn't even make any sense.
It sounds like...
Now, I have the music still in the computer, but what I have to do is reorganize it and rename the library, whatever I want to call it, jazz or, you know, whatever.
It sounds like the media player is losing the connection to the external hard drive.
Is the library still there?
Oh, yeah.
You can see the library, that's just there's nothing
in it.
Well,
and if you look at that folder on the hard drive, the music is all there.
I got about two or three different libraries set up depending on the type of music and the type of people that are coming over. I have music designated for older folks like myself who enjoy older music. But on the other hand, if kids come over and like that, I have music set aside for them. In another library, I call for a younger crowd or something like that.
Sure.
You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And then my aunt comes over. She loves country music. So I put a whole bunch of country music, and I call that library country.
Right.
Okay. Well, now yesterday, well, it's not the first time it's happened. It's actually happened several times. Yesterday, we had some company, and I put the country on, and all of it was gone. There probably was 100 tunes in it.
And it's not even on the hard drive anymore.
Oh, yeah. It's on the hard drive. It's just not in the library.
Sounds like something in the program. You know, even though you got the latest and greatest, like you said, everything's up to snuff in the programs and all that, it sounds like that program has got some glitches in it still, you know, especially with this new Microsoft Media or XP Media, that, you know, it's literally destroying your list or losing track of your list, even though the stuff is still physically there on the drive.
Mm-hmm.
Like you say, all those lists are still there. What I would suggest is go into the forums for that particular product, and see if folks are running into the same issue.
Yes,
okay, go into Windows Media, one of their
Media
news,
XP.
News groups or something like that.
Yeah, and see in the forums and the FAQs, I'll bet you 10 to 1 eyed, you're finding a lot of other folks that are running into the same issue, you know, because it is a relatively new operating system as far as that aspect of it, and they're still trying to iron out some glitches.
Yeah, it's probably just a preference file or a registry entry that's
getting
lost.
Because that software is so specific on the video and the sound card and everything else that it needs to run correctly, they're still trying to iron out issues, which they're not, you know, really publicizing
okay.
very
All right,
much.
I could try that. I'll just go to Windows Media News Group.
There you go.
And let us know, please, let us know how you make out on this, because...
I was curious, and I always listen to your show all the time.
Well, we appreciate that.
And, but I don't usually call in, because most of the time I don't have problems. But I was just curious if you guys heard of this. Or something
yeah,
like
it's
that.
All kind of new to us. Let us know. I'm afraid we have to disappear. We're going to take another quick break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Brendan Cooper, me, Nick Francesco, and all of you on Soundbites on 1180 WHAM.
Talk that you can understand. Now back to Soundbites with Nick, Dave, and Steve on News Radio 1180 WHAM.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Brendan Cooper.
And you are indeed... listening to Sound Bites. Our next caller is Tony from Greece, New York. Welcome, Tony. What's your question?
Hello.
Hi there.
Hi. Thank you very much. I really enjoy your show, first of all.
Well, thank you.
And I had some questions on the printer problem.
Mm-hmm.
Just this morning I noticed I got an Epson printer, and it's actually a photo printer. It was brand new. I had it here for over 2 years before I hooked it up a couple of months ago. And I went to print something off Roadrunner this morning. I wanted instructions on if I go away, how to access my email and all that.
Right.
And all I'll get is it'll print pictures that are on that page and even the commercials or the ads, but it doesn't print any of the content. So I went to my email and tried printing up some of that, and it doesn't print anything. It keeps going back and forth, but it just spits out blank pages or pages with red dots in it.
It sounds like your black ink is empty. Or you said just a brand new printer?
No, it is putting out black ink, because when it put out the pictures and all that, and I tried printing the front page of Roadrunner right now. It showed a picture of Tom Reynolds and all that, and put the temperature and time out in black ink and all that.
Well, that could be a color picture mixing the three black the three colors to get black.
Uh-huh.
But when you're printing text only,
right.
it may just be in black only. What often happens with color printers, if you don't use them for a while,
uh-huh.
the ink tanks will dry out and clog up the heads.
Black. Yeah, and it shows that there's ink in there. You know how it shows the picture with the amount of ink and all that?
Did you try updating the drivers?
Did I what?
Try updating the drivers? I'm assuming you're running this for XP?
Yeah, no, I didn't try updating anything. Mm-hmm.
I'd also try the head cleaning utility in the Epson utility. It prints out a pure black, pure cyan, pure magenta, pure yellow.
Uh-huh.
And then you can see if any of the heads are clogged or if the ink isn't being delivered properly.
Yeah, I didn't know that you could get some black and white out without using the black ink, actually.
Yeah, of the really cheap printers don't even have a black cartridge at all. They just have the CMY cartridge, and
uh-huh.
it mixes those three colors to make sort of black.
Uh-huh.
Quasimodo black.
Yeah, it's more of a muddy brown than it is a pure black,
yeah.
But the printers are $10 cheaper that way by not having that second tank.
One other question with this printer, and actually my previous one, is it seems to cut off the edge of the picture like it's too wide. How could I shrink that down?
Which browser are you using? Or is this in any program?
The browser?
There's in the print, when you go to print, you can say shrink to fit.
Okay.
Only in some programs.
Many of them. Also, make sure that you've got the right size paper. Some of these drivers assume you've got A4 paper, which is a European standard,
uh-huh.
and not letter paper, U.S. letter, which is, of course, what we're using here.
Yeah, that's what I have here.
You got to make sure you tell the printer that, too. And it's also very common in Internet Explorer to chop off the right side of the paper anyway.
Internet
that's
Explorer
what I'm using in Internet Explorer.
Yeah.
How could I change that?
Don't use Internet Explorer.
Oh, you don't?
Pretty much the way that works. Internet Explorer just doesn't really print well.
If you turn your page setup
landscape sideways,
then it doesn't cut off as much to the side, but then it might cut off stuff at the bottom.
Well, look for that feature also, shrink to fit.
Let me ask you another stupid question. I use the Internet Explorer. If I went to something else, could I still do it through Roadrunner and use my same email?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I use Firefox all day, every day, and it works perfectly.
And you're uh-huh. probably using Outlook Express for email?
Yes.
That's another big, dangerous problem on the Internet. All of the viruses and hacks and Trojan horses come through Outlook Express.
Through that.
You should use something like Thunderbird or Eudora.
Yeah, I had to actually go back and do the go back to a previous date because I did a download of, you know, they put that security shield on, and I did a download last week and had nothing but troubles after that.
Yeah, definitely check the two of those out and see where that takes you.
It'll convert everything for them so easily.
Exactly. All you do is install it. It'll say, oh, you got this stuff. You want to convert it? You say, yes, you're on your way.
Yep. In fact, I heard a customer talking about that yesterday, that he ran an Adware scan and had zero cookies. Because he's running Mozilla.
Exactly. Well, what they're doing now is there actually was a conference to talk about how people aren't using cookies and how that's bad for the industry. So there's going to actually be campaigns, cookies are good for you.
Well, in general, they are.
Yeah. In general, they are, but you have to pick and choose. And now they're working on ways to give you to track you and all that stuff without using cookies. So we're in a leapfrog kind of thing now, and we'll see what happens next. Speaking of leapfrogging, we're going to take a quick break, leapfrog over the next few minutes, and come back after these short economic dramas. And we'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Brendan Cooper, me, Nick Francesco, and all of you on the greatest computer show in the known and probably unknown universe, Soundbites, on 1180 WHAM.
The Wegmans Rod. Answering your computer questions for over 15 years. It's Soundbites with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on News Radio 1180 WHAM.
Welcome back, everybody. I am Nick Francesco.
I must be Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Brendan Cooper.
That's exactly right. We all know who we are. It's a beautiful thing. We're going to go back to the phones, but first, we have Steve would like to correct everything we said last week about the Intel Macintosh deal.
Well, just clarify little things, and your questions and comments were pretty much what the entire industry is wondering about. The core announcement is that Apple's future generations of Macintosh computers, starting in mid-2006, so we have a year already to wait, will be using Intel processors rather than IBM processors. It's still going to be a Mac on the outside, Apple hardware, the Apple software, just running on Intel processors. They announced it when they did this month because it's their developers conference. So they need to give developers that year to get their... which way was the camera pointing there?
I just hit myself in the face with the microphone. How the heck many years have I been on the radio? I don't even know where the stinking microphone...
And you walk
Jeez
in,
and crackers, yeah. Don't try this at home. I'm clearly a professional.
We are a professional.
Go ahead.
So they made the announcement at their Worldwide Developers Conference. So the developers have the next year to make sure their programs will run okay on an Intel-based Mac that people are already starting to call Mactel. To compare against the Wintel machines. It does not mean you'll be able to run macOS 10 on a Dell or a Compaq or a Gateway. In fact, Apple has specifically said they will do everything in their power, both technically and legally, to prevent that from happening.
Except that now, right now, you can. The developer edition.
No, it's not a PC. It's a standard PowerMac G5 processor chassis with an Intel Pentium 4 in it instead of an IBM PowerPC 970.
Ah.
Everything else is the same Macintosh that it always ever was, just a different CPU in it. For the end user, it won't matter and shouldn't matter,
right.
For developers, they need to be able to recompile for Intel code. And when the rumors started coming out, my big criticism against the possibility was the huge engineering undertaking to convert the whole macOS to Intel. And what Jobs said at the keynote was that for the last 5 years, just in case, they have already been writing macOS 10, the Darwin kernel for the Intel processor. The current macOS 10 came from Next Step, which was Steve Jobs' earlier company, Next, and their processor did run on the Motorola 68000 and the Intel x86. So the Mac has been leading a secret double life for the last 5 years, already running on Intel processors. IBM and Jobs changed a little bit on the way of their performance issues. That in the past, the IBM...
Well, I got to say for how many years you've been saying speed doesn't matter,
megahertz thing, doesn't matter.
Megahertz don't matter, blah, blah, blah. We're twice as fast at the same megahertz.
We're as fast at half the
clock. And
now
all of a sudden, everywhere I read, thank God we're going to the Intel chip because it's so much faster.
Not specifically. The IBM chips are fast...
How does it classically sidestep it?
The IBM chips are faster at half the clock speed. So a G5 at 2 gigahertz is the same, about the same speed as a Pentium at 4 gigahertz. The issue has now become, more importantly, heat dissipation. And when when Jobs introduced the G5 2 years ago, it came out with a 2.0 machine, and he said, we're going to have 3.0 in a year. And now 2 years later, IBM still hasn't delivered a 3.0 G5, and they can't get a G5 laptop because of the heat issues.
Right.
So the Intel processors are much lower heat, and they're running at a higher clock speed. So the test machines, in fact, Jobs showed the Mac he was running his demos on was Intel-based. It was a Pentium 4 at 3.6 gigahertz. And it ran about the same as the G5 at 2 gigahertz that he had been using, but 2.5 gigahertz we're up to, or 2.7. We made it to 2.7 in 2 years, yeah. Didn't make that magic 3. So a lot of people are joking, to IBM, when one of your big customers says they're going to ship a 3 gigahertz machine in a year, you should probably ship a 3 gigahertz machine for them.
Duh.
So what won't happen is that you'll run Mac OS X on a Dell or a Compaq. What will likely happen is a program like Virtual PC, which allows you to run Windows software on your Mac, right now is very slow because it's translating all the code.
Right.
So that will probably run a lot faster. So people that mostly want to run Mac, but the occasional Windows
now
program.
Now, how are you guys, and to get away from the Macintosh propaganda for a moment, how are you guys handling the fact that it's going to be the Adam Osborne
right,
problem?
Right, yeah, I listened to last week's show, so it's... The biggest issue is it's going to be a year before we see any Intel-based Mac, and 2 years or more before the switch is completely made. So it's a transitional period. And Jobs said that there's still several more PowerPC-based machines due out in the next year. In fact, probably the entire product line will get revised at least once in a whole year. But he compared it to the previous switches. The original Apple II was based on the MOS chip, and then they switched to the Mac with the Motorola 68000. Then they switched to the IBM PowerPC. For the last 10 years, it was 10 years ago in 1993, they started the transitions to PowerPC chips, and that was a huge transition for developers. And then we made the OS 9 to OS 10 switch, which was a huge, a developer transition. So now we're doing the PowerPC to Intel chip.
Yeah, but this one is a change for customers as well. It's a different... It's really, from their point of view, it's a very different switch.
Well, and at the bottom line...
So the question is, how do you say to them, well, do I wait for a year, do I do it now, or what do I do?
That's always been the question. You know there's a better machine coming in 6 months. Can you wait 6 months? Can you wait a year? Then go ahead and do it. But if you need a machine now, go ahead and buy it now. For the end user, it won't make any difference. The only thing you'll have to keep in mind is when you're buying new software, it will say requires PowerPC G whatever or requires Intel whatever. So the end user doesn't care what chip. In fact, most of the time, the end user doesn't even know what chip is in their computer. So the announcement was for developers. If you're running the Xcode development kit, it's very easy to translate your computers to run
on
Intel processors.
Remember we had that same discussion with IBM?
Right.
I mean Intel, telling them why don't they put a sticker on
right.
the outside.
So basically what you're really saying is that they'll continue, if I buy a box today or tomorrow or in 6 months,
everything
they'll still continue
right.
to support it.
And everything you buy now will still
the
run.
The life of that system,
later.
It'll all still
yep.
run. I'll be able to buy new versions, blah, 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 blah. So, all right, good. We're going to be back after the news. The great Joan Hildenbrand is right in on Soundbites on 1180 WHAM.
America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on News Radio 1180 WHAM. Get online now. Call 222-1180. The Choice One toll-free line at 1-800-295-1180 or *1180. A free call for Verizon Wireless subscribers. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on News Radio 1180 WHAM.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Brendan Cooper.
Now, on the line, we have Tom and Dave and Allison and Brett, and we'll be getting to them shortly, but we have a very special guest on the line right now. We have Edward Suk, who's the executive director of the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children, the New York branch, and we're delighted to have him on the line. Edward, are you there?
Yes, I sure am. Thanks so much for having me on today, guys.
Oh, no. Welcome. Welcome
yeah,
to, the,
thank
to
you.
The show.
Just to let folks know why we're doing this is you're hosting tomorrow a seminar with a lot of us computer repair places, and tell the folks a little bit what's so special about the seminar.
Yeah, we sure are. This is a really exciting opportunity. We're hosting a seminar tomorrow in conjunction with the Monroe County Sheriff's Department and the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children New York branch. We're holding it at 275 Lake Avenue, which is our main office, and we're focusing on providing state-of-the-art training for a couple of hours to computer repair technicians and those individuals that work on the hard drives of computers, to give them some information to help us in the fight against child pornography.
Which I'll tell you right now, everybody in this studio is 100% behind you on that one.
Well, I've already turned over four people already. I work with Mike, and I, you know, with the Sheriff's Department on that. I think I was probably one of the first in the city of Rochester to ever call him, you know, back. It was Joe Henneke back in the time, and get on this, because people don't realize how much it's spreading.
Yeah, it's an enormous problem. It really is an enormous problem. And what we're seeing with the Internet, the advent of the Internet and the ability to share information, is that it is now the stomping ground for pedophiles. They have very easy access to kids, and there is a tremendous amount of child pornography that's getting trafficked on the Internet.
Now, I do want to make clear, this is about child pornography.
Absolutely.
The regular stuff that's completely legal still in this
consenting
country.
Consenting adults.
What you and your consenting computer do is your business. We're talking about child porn.
We should point out, too, that we repair people don't actually dig through computers, you know, looking for this stuff. But, you know, if you're going to take your computer into the shop, change your desktop pattern and your screensaver.
Yeah, right.
We don't really want to look at that.
Yeah, right, exactly. Go ahead. Sorry.
Yeah. Well, you guys have a unique opportunity. I mean, when you're working on someone's hard drive and you're repairing a computer, you may come across images, and those images, again, if they're of an adult nature, whole different story. But if it's child pornography, and that's one of the aspects of this course tomorrow morning is going to be to help identify what is child pornography and what is not child pornography, so that when you see an image come up in front of you, you'll have a pretty good understanding of whether or not it's inappropriate. And then, more importantly, or equally as importantly, what to do once you see that image.
Yeah, because there is a whole procedure you have to go through. Like I say, I've been through it four times already with Joe Henneke and now Mike, going through this whole procedure, because, you know, like you say, it is very sticky, because, you know, they're going to be facing court, possibly.
Absolutely, and that's a chain of evidence issue for law enforcement, and we need to make certain that if there is evidence of a crime that's been committed against a child, and child pornography is a crime, that whatever evidence is there is maintained and importantly reported to the appropriate authorities, so that we can investigate it and make certain that whoever has produced it and whoever is possessing it is held accountable for that.
So, excuse me, apparently I'm choking to death. So tomorrow's seminar is a lot more about policy and procedure than it is about, you know, ways to search people's hard drives or some silly thing like that.
And this is strictly for the repair industry. It's not for Joe Public or anybody else.
You got it. It's strictly for the repair industry, and it's to help those individuals that work on computers on a daily basis be able to identify what is and what is not child pornography, and then have a very clear understanding of what you should or should not be doing with those images once you've identified them, and who to report to.
Yeah, right.
And then it's in the hands of law enforcement. Then you can kind of put it off on law enforcement and let those professionals that do this on a regular basis handle the investigation.
Right. Yeah, and one thing, and not to scare people off either, is like a couple times I've had to, once I've done this, then take a little time off and do a deposition, go down and fill out a deposition. But you know what? I've got five grandchildren.
Yep.
And the thought of to ever, you know, seeing these kids, and that's basically what it is, folks, is, you know, kids 13 and under that these adults are exploiting and doing stuff that just would sicken your stomach. It does mine. And, you know, and I'd just like to, you know, hang them and slowly crucify them if I could get away with it. Probably nobody would blame me. But, you know, to sit there and see this child's life ruined for the rest of their life. Because even though the images might disappear for a while, you know, 5-6 years, because it is the internet, it could pop up again.
Well, we've seen that happen. In fact, there are some images of child pornography that we have seen on the internet for years and years, and there are pedophiles out on the internet that will actually seek out certain images of particular children that they've been made aware of by other pedophiles. And there may be a series of images of a particular child that has very high value among predators out there, and mm-hmm. they'll do anything to try to get the full number in the series. And it's really rather twisted and certainly an inappropriate and awfully exploitive use of children. And I'm really glad that you guys are helping us kind of shed some light on it too, because sometimes when you think about movies or images, you don't really have a full flavor of what that child necessarily went through
right.
in order for those images to be made.
Right.
Well, that was the thing. When my first one was way back when. This had to be easily 7 years ago when I worked with Joe Henneke on this and first got introduced to this, because I saw this image and it was just literally appalling. And, you know, like you say, this I think will better educate folks in the repair industry to do something, because unless we do something about it and be proactive, this stuff is still going to spread, and those kids are what's going to suffer.
Right.
Absolutely.
Now, before we lose track of it, tell us again where, when. It's specifically for computer repair people from every walk of life, not just the independent vendors, but also folks who are their own home businessmen and people working in large companies. So tell us a little bit about more and when and where and how they get in touch.
That's correct. This is taking place tomorrow morning between 8:30 and 10 o'clock. It'll be at 275 Lake Avenue, which are the main offices for the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children.
Whereabouts is that close to?
It's just about three blocks north of where State Street turns into Lake Avenue, just north of Kodak.
Okay.
There's plenty of construction, so you'll know you're in the right area.
right around the Lake and Lyle area?
Yeah, you got it. Just a couple blocks north of Lyle.
It'll be hard to speed past it.
Right, you're not going to go ripping past, that's for sure.
Cool.
You'll find us. There's a large parking lot and a big sign out front with the National Center logo. And it's being held in our Policini Law Enforcement Training Center. And, again, we're thrilled to be able to partner with the Monroe County Sheriff's Office on this. And it's just, I think, a very innovative way to be able to bring in a whole other group of folks that can be eyes and ears for us when it comes to identifying these kids that are at risk.
Well, like
now,
I say,
anybody who's,
my partner Dan is going to be there.
Now, anybody who's listening who hasn't signed up for this, can they still come?
Yes. Yeah, we have some capacity left. I can't guarantee you that we're going to be able to get you in the morning. But if you are a computer tech and you want to be able to swing by, you can swing by at 8:30. And if we are at capacity, we'll unfortunately have to turn your way. But we should be able to accommodate you. So feel free to swing by at 8:30 in the morning. Just buzz the front door, and we'll let you in.
Perfect. Perfect. Thanks so much. We really, really appreciate it. I think I got to tell you, I think this is a phenomenal thing that you folks are doing. God bless you for it.
Yes.
And I hope lots of people show up and get a lot of
well,
good information.
I know
they'll
some,
get good information.
Some of your folks from RIT, I got
yep.
in touch with them. They're coming. I know, you know, I tried to get a hold of a lot of the other universities and that type of stuff.
Right.
I wasn't able to just because of timing issues and all that. So maybe if this one does overflow, Ed, you'll agree that maybe this will prompt us to do maybe another one down the road.
Oh, no question about it. No question
because
about it.
Because I am definitely, like I say, behind it and want to get everybody trained on it.
Do you have a local website?
We do not have a local website. We have a national website, www.missingkids.com. .com.
Yeah, I've got that one published. I was just seeing if you guys had a local one with your local events.
There is a New York page on that website, but it's not all that easy to get to. In fact, we're working on making it a little bit easier and a little bit more user-friendly.
Great.
All right. Well, thanks so much, Ed, and good luck on this tomorrow, and I'm sure it'll be phenomenal. If you folks are computer techs, go for it.
Great.
Thanks
a bunch, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. That's a very important thing. I'm glad we were able to talk about that.
Yeah, like I say, I'm going to be there, and my partner Dan, just to, you know, even though we know what to do, you know, I'd like to learn even more.
Sure, absolutely. Absolutely. We're going to go back to the phones now, and we're going to talk to Tom in Fairport, New York. Welcome, Tom. What's your question?
Good Good morning.
Hi. Thank you for hanging in.
Good afternoon now. I got a problem on my desktop screen. I got a bunch of photos from one of my children, and she does it through AOL, that photo program that they have. And AOL downloads that stuff onto your desktop as opposed to putting into anything else you want.
Mm-hmm.
I opened the thing up, and what it did was splatter the screen with all of these JPEG icons that are the photos. And it just, when I tried to get rid of them, the thing started replicating itself. And now I have something like 177 copies of all those photos.
The easiest thing to do first.
Yep.
Is right click on the desktop itself.
Yeah.
And select new folder. Create a new folder.
Yeah.
Name it whatever you want to name it. And then start dragging those files into that new folder. That gets them off the desktop, and now you can start to deal with them a little better.
Deleting them isn't going to work?
You can just delete them, select them and delete them, and they're gone, but now you don't have them anymore.
Well, I can always get them back, because as a matter of fact, I told her to stop using AOL, and I told her to burn them and send me the CDs.
There you go.
It's nothing to do with AOL. It's your email program and what it downloads to. If your email program downloads to the desktop, then that's where anyone's going to
put anything and everything.
You can tell any email program to download files to a specific folder rather than straight on the desktop.
Create a folder off the C drive called Download.
Or even on the desktop.
Yeah, that's what I normally do. I put all my stuff I download on zip disk.
Right.
But you have to tell your email program to do that. Otherwise, it throws everything it downloads right on the desktop.
Okay, I thought that was an AOL. Okay, very good.
Okay,
thank you, gentlemen.
All right, listen, we're going to take another break, but we'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray. We've got Brendan Cooper on the controls. We've got Dave and Allison and Brett hanging on the lines. We've got all kinds of other good stuff to talk about. We'll do all that shortly on Soundbites on 1180 WHAM.
Whams, answer your questions. Back to more Soundbites on News Radio 1180 WHAM.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Henry.
I'm Steve Ray.
And this is Soundbites.
You cut him off.
You just cut him off.
It's okay. I'm still Brendan Cooper, and I'm still here.
Sorry,
I'm trying to multitask here.
There's been a lot going on.
Yeah.
Apparently, the drugs haven't kicked in yet, and I don't have any idea.
There we go.
Brendan, I apologize. We have Brendan Cooper.
Not a problem.
And Rob Linton is sleeping off a binge. He worked hard last night, and
he's not here today.
Our next caller is Dave from Springwater, New York. Welcome, Dave. What's your question?
Good afternoon, gentlemen.
Hi there.
Happy Father's Day to you.
And you too.
All right. I have a networking question. What I have is two 2.6 gig computers, a desktop and a laptop. Both use XP Home. They both use a dial-up connection of their own, and I'm using a Netgear router for file and printer sharing.
Mm-hmm.
Netgear sent me a notice that they have a firmware upgrade. I should have ignored it. Yeah. Ever since I put it in, the network hasn't been working the way it used to. It worked great for 2 years until I put the upgrade in. Now what's happening is, as long as the router is turned on, I cannot get to the Internet at all. If I turn the router off, I can get to the Internet using my normal dial-up connection. But if the if I don't try and get to the Internet, I can share files, use the printer like I always have.
When you did this upgrade, did it involve putting software on the PCs?
No, just bringing one in and just a firmware upgrade
to the router itself. Hub. Yeah, the router.
It probably changed how the gateway is responding.
Well, my question is this. I've been fighting with it for about a week and a half now. Before I dig out the chainsaw, can you give me an idea which files I need to rip out and how to get the router out of there so I can start over again with a clean slate?
You can't. Unless you can go to Netgear's website and find the old firmware to re-download
and going backwards usually doesn't work.
Right. Yeah. The problem is the router thinks it's sending files to the Internet. And your computer thinks it's sending files to the Internet over two different paths, from the router and from the dial-up. So it sounds like the router is taking priority. What you want to do is can you turn off routing functions? Because you just want it to be a hub. You don't need it to be a router.
Right. Well, they suggested a program called WinProxy for dial-up. And that almost fixes it until you reboot and then it's gone again.
Yeah.
It starts doing the same thing again. I even bought another router. I'm going to try that in a couple of days as soon as it arrives.
You don't want a router. You just want a hub.
Right. Well, this is the only way I know to do it. I'm not that bright. I'm from the Timex Sinclair age. So.
Right. Does your modem go through the router? Is that what's happening?
No. Well, it's trying to.
Right. It sees two paths to the Internet, and the PC is trying to go to the router instead of the dial-up.
Exactly.
For IP, for that connection.
Right. As soon as you kick up Firefox, it automatically goes to the router and brings up the welcome window.
We have there is a Netgear support thing on no Internet access through the router. We'll have that up on our website in a couple of minutes. It's a long, involved URL.
And the whole point of a router is to give you Internet access through the router.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So you're not using it for its intended purposes, and so that's why it's not working.
Right. Well, it's worked great for 2 years until they did the firmware upgrade.
Yeah. And see, that's the problem.
They probably tried to block a security hole in letting the computer dial out itself.
Yeah, and that's actually a chip inside that router hub, and you're literally updating the information on that chip.
Okay.
And to try to sit there and go backwards usually is...
Yeah, if you can go into the router setup screen, they usually use a web front end for the router setup,
right.
Turn off all the routing functions. Turn off DHCP, turn off upstream DNS, and you want to turn off the router and just turn it into an ordinary hub.
Yeah, I just want a plain old hub.
Right, it says here at the bottom, if you are a dial-up user converting... some software will not work with both types of configuration. Configuring your new connection may stop your dial-up. You may have to configure to do one or the other. And clearly, you're configured at this point to do both.
So in your computer, in the Internet connection settings, you want to change the order so that your dial-up connection is before your Ethernet connection.
Right.
And you want to change that to always dial the Internet. It's probably set now to dial when no network connection.
Exactly.
Since your computer sees a network connection, it tries to use it. You want to make sure that it dials the phone instead of using the network connection it sees.
And then, like you said, go into the hub, which you'll have to use a browser to get into that Netgear hub and change some of the internal settings there.
Okay,
or get rid of the router and just get a regular hub.
Oh, all right. Well, that's a possibility, too.
Yep.
There you go.
Thank you, gentlemen.
Thanks.
I think you can get a five-port hub for like $20.
Yeah.
They're dirt cheap.
Right, unless you want the gigabit hubs.
Yeah.
The students who work for me at work are trying to talk me into a gigabit hub.
Well, they're down to $100 a port.
Yeah, exactly.
There you go.
We just sold a 24-port gigabit router. It was only like $1,500. Who was it? Asante had one.
Yeah.
So they used to be $1,000 a port. Now they're down to $50 a port.
Yeah, exactly. So they're getting a lot better. Our next caller is Allison from Williamson, New York. Welcome, Allison. What's your question?
Hi, guys. Thanks. If you've touched on this before, I apologize, but I've got a problem with my computer that I can't dial up. There's a clicking on the line. And it's not the phone lines. It's not outside or inside wiring, because when I unplug the computer from the modem to the jack, any of my other phones work fine. But as soon as I plug it back in, I get the clicking back.
You've got one of a couple of different problems, Allison.
Okay.
Either there's an actual problem with the modem or the cable.
Okay.
Or, and this we've seen this happen before. Mm-hmm. You can only put so much load on a phone line. So if you have a bunch of different phones in the house,
okay,
and those phones are cheap, they often are beyond spec. So you get too much of a load on the line, and it may be that with the computer plugged in, you've just gone over the load limit.
Yeah, it's called the ringer equivalence. Every telephone will have a ringer equivalence number. You add up all those numbers, and I think you're only allowed a maximum of 2 or 3 or something like that.
Yeah, they're like a 0.8 or a 0.6 or whatever the number is. Okay. So the easiest thing to do is to try unplugging a couple of other phones, 2 or 3 other phones,
okay,
before you plug in the modem and see if that solves the problem.
And that includes telephones, fax machines, answering machines, any telephone device.
Right.
Okay. I switched out the modem, and that obviously wasn't the problem because they still had the clicking. However, now my computer is freezing up, which I don't understand that at all.
Well, if you switched the modem and didn't switch the modem drivers, then the drivers are trying to run the wrong modem. And that would cause that problem.
Okay.
So you have a choice of either putting the right drivers in for the modem or putting the old modem back.
You probably will need to uninstall both drivers now, because Windows probably picked up the new modem and said, oh, here's drivers for it, and will likely have drivers for both modems. So you may need to go to the device manager and remove both of the modems there to uninstall them both, and then only install the driver for the modem that's actually in the computer.
Okay, when I, and this is just maybe a silly question, but when I go to the device manager, and it says add remove. If I just click remove, is that going to really take it out? Oh, okay.
Yep.
I wasn't sure.
Yep.
Okay. Well, thanks, guys. I'm going to try that. I hope it works.
Yeah, let us know
Me
how you
too,
make
Allison,
it out.
And let us know.
I will. Thank you.
Thanks. You can also hear when she's talking that there's a bit of a hum on the line, so that's going to be a problem, too. The real
And it's a problem, though. The modems are more sensitive to all that noise,
and
our ear will tolerate it.
And we just had a big thunderstorm last weekend?
Yeah.
So we are actually very surprised we didn't get any modem service in.
Wow.
We usually get two or three after a thunderstorm.
Yeah, exactly.
So I guess more and more people are using the modem surge suppressors now.
That's a very good thing.
Yep. They're
that's
so
a
cheap.
Very good thing.
Built into most of the power strips these days, too.
Yeah. Our next caller is David, high on a mountaintop in Pennsylvania. Welcome, David. What's your question?
Thanks, guys. You're sounding good today.
Thanks.
A couple of quickies relating to my use of Firefox.
Yeah.
Question. I always used to like to use Trends. A house call program. It's something that I find useful. Can't use it with Firefox. I looked at Panda, looked at Symantec. They have equivalent programs, you know, just for general searching, virus searching. They don't work either under Firefox. Do you guys know of a virus search program that does the same thing as like a house call does that'll run under Firefox?
No, and here's the real reason why. I'm not a big fan of the ones that you run from the internet because they are a security hole into your system. Now, certainly Trend Micro is a well-known company, as is Panda, as is Symantec, but they leave a hole behind, and I'm not happy with that. So I'm not a big fan of those house call type programs, personally, me. I don't know of one that works, because I just don't look into them.
And the thing is you got to be connected to the internet to use it.
Right.
And you know, if you're not connected, say you're on dial up and you get a disc from somebody. And, you know, because you're not hooked up to the internet and, you know, doesn't have the latest, and scanning it, it could let a virus in that way. Whereas if you actually have the program on your machine, and the current data files not relying on something online, you could run into
problems.
And
it's likely those online scanners are written in the Microsoft Virtual Machine.
Right.
And that's why they don't work in any other browser, which would use Java.
Right.
Yeah, they seem to need ActiveX. Well, okay, second question quickly. SpyBot Search and Destroy has a feature where they can they call it blocking bad products. It blocks more than 2,000, I think, at this point. Is that feature active under Firefox, or does that only apply to Internet Explorer users?
I don't believe that applies to any specific browser. I don't believe so.
It may.
Well, the thing is, it's an ActiveX control blocker.
Yep.
So it's less likely to be used under Firefox, but it
those
works.
Those exploits can't get through Firefox anyway.
Right. It doesn't actually work through the browser. It works under the browser, so it doesn't matter which browser you use.
Appreciate it, guys. Thanks a lot.
There you go. Thanks.
We actually had a problem at a customer site this week. They're using DSL, and apparently through the thunderstorms, they got a new IP address on their DSL line, and the customer couldn't send any mail. And it turns out that their IP address had been disabled for viruses and spam. So I call up the DSL company and say, we're on a Mac, there are no viruses and spam, can you turn our IP back on? No. It's company policy, you must run an antivirus program on your computer. Okay. So he says, well, go to Trend Micro and run their online scanner. Doesn't work on a Mac. Okay, go to Symantec and run their online scanner. Doesn't work on a Mac.
Right.
Oh. Hang on. So I guess they were finally able to tell, is because, you know, talking with the customer support person was actually talking to the tech in the back room. I think he was able to say it's a new IP address. So it's whoever had that IP address last,
right?
Not us. So.
Well, that's an interesting problem that we run into a lot. How do you identify somebody on the internet? IP address is the cleanest way to do that because every IP address is unique, but the IP address doesn't necessarily belong to you. It comes out of a pool from your internet service provider. Mm-hmm. If you dial in, the modem is what has the IP, and you get that IP, you borrow that IP for the time you're online. When you get on Roadrunner, DSL, whatever, you're getting your address out of a pool. You often get the same one, but it doesn't necessarily have to be the same one.
Especially after storms when their systems restart and everyone gets a new address.
Well, right. DSL just 2 weeks ago did maintenance.
Yeah. Right.
And they let you know that you're going to have to shut down and reset your hub and your router.
Right. I'm having that discussion. I can't tell you. We do it on Soundbites. If you vote in the poll, you don't get to vote twice. And we do it by IP address. So a bunch of people often get on and find that the poll's already done for them, and they don't seem to mind. But I'm also doing that on Ask Nick, my website, asknick.com. I'm looking to upgrade the service, and I'm asking people what they want, and there's a survey there. And I basically use the same code, the same IP address. If you've already voted, you don't get to vote again. And people are getting porky about the fact that they go to vote for the service they'd like, and they've already got an answer in there, and they don't like that. And I don't really know quite what to tell them at this point, because unless I go around putting cookies on every machine of every person who ever logs on to Ask Nick. Now, I do have cookies for the time you're on so that I can track where you are and I don't knock you off if you're a logged-in member. But I don't keep track of everybody all the time. I don't want to. I don't care about what you do with your life outside of my site. So I'm not doing that, and the only way I can do it is by IP. It's an interesting problem. There's no solution to it right now. I suppose I could do the MAC address. That would work. That is unique to every machine, but I don't know. I'll have to look into that. But I don't think I could. Well, right.
Yeah.
Right. But I don't know that I can look into. I don't know that I can find that data over the internet as easily. At any rate, we're going to take a quick break. We've got some folks on the line. We've got some stuff to talk about when we come back. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Brendan Cooper, me, Nick Francesco, and all of you on the great, great Soundbites on 1180 WHAM.
Computer talk that you can understand. Now back to Sound Bites with Nick, Dave, and Steve on News Radio 1180 WHAM.
Half the time we don't understand it. All right, never mind.
But it sounds like we do.
It sounds like we do. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Brendan Cooper.
Okay. This is a little dramatic pause there. Very nice. I like that.
Just making sure you weren't going to cut him off again.
Exactly. Yeah. It's my fault, and I admit it. I absolutely admit it. We're going to go back to the phones in just a minute. We've got Joe, Sam, and Bob on the line. But before we do, I want to talk a little bit about what goes on our website at soundbites.org. That's bites with a Y. Francis would like us to remind you. Every week we do a poll. Last week's poll was about what you use for driving directions. Almost half of you use MapQuest. 382 of you voted. 382, making number 46 on the all-time hit list. Thank you all. About half of you use MapQuest, followed by Google Maps at only 12% for a product that didn't even exist a year ago. That's
I love Google satellite maps. That's really cool.
Yeah,
and pretty
Google's
disconcerting.
Doing some amazing stuff. Yeah. Well, and Google is doing PayPal now. They're going to do their own PayPal-type service.
Mm-hmm.
They're bringing that up. So, do you trust eBay more, or do you trust Google more? Is really what that's going to come down to. So that's a bunch of stuff. 8% of you use the Force.
Have you seen Google's front page today?
4% of us just ask our spouses
for Father's Day. It's like Google always puts up, you know, cute little logos on special occasions, and the Father's Day logo is kind of cute.
Yeah, it is.
Dad in his hammock and the dog bringing him his paper.
Yeah, I was playing with my dogs this morning. I have two.
Mine dogs would shred it.
I have two. Yeah, exactly. I have two dogs. They're part Black Lab, part Bull Mastiff. They're 5 months old, and they already weigh 56 pounds.
Big and stupid.
More than my two. Yeah. One of them.
Yeah, right, exactly. So at any rate, that was our poll. This week's poll, I don't know if you heard about this, the latest MasterCard credit card theft, $40 million. That's with an M, 40 million credit card accounts. were affected. A bunch of thieves breached the system's credit card processor, card system solutions.
One thing, though, good about MasterCard, even though, you know, they can do the, you know, the charging and all that, a lot versus the other, because MasterCard's only one part of it.
Right.
And MasterCard,
right, it's not just MasterCard.
Right. But within their information that got leaked out, no Social Security numbers, no DOBs, unlike some of the others, that some of that information was tied into that
right.
stuff that leaked
right.
out.
At least they're keeping that a little bit separate, and that's
yeah.
kind of nice. What bothers me, of course, is...
Only 68,000 were actually in the high risk.
Right. Here's Yeah, that's good. Oh, only 68,000. Here's what bothers me. One of their spokes individuals said that the accounts were taken from Card Systems database by running a script. Now, excuse me, but what operating system is it that you can run a script on where script kiddies can break into your systems? First, there ought to be a systems administrator somewhere looking for severance pay right this moment.
Well, probably is, and they're not saying much because, yeah, because they interviewed one gentleman that said, yeah, they can get in, download the scripts run, and it opens up a door, a portal,
yeah.
and away they go.
Yep. It just boggles my mind. One of the people on our on the opinion side reminds us that Bank of America customers couldn't get any of their money for a couple days because they were hit by the slammer worm. So these
mm-hmm.
people are all using unsecured operating systems. And if I were the government, I'd be going in and slapping some people around. Anyway, that's this week's poll, and it's at soundbites.org. Once you've voted, you'll see your vote sitting right there, and currently we've got 78 votes online. You can then go underneath it. You'll see a little yellow box, and that will lead you to my website at asknick.com. That's asknick.com, where you can enter your opinion, because I know that just clicking a button for our folks, clicking a button isn't enough. They have more to say. We've got 10 people actually already talking about it now, and that's great. Please leave an opinion, please make it have something to do with the actual topic. That would be good. And when you're done, feel free to take a look around my website at asknick.com. Did I say that enough?
Yeah.
Asknick.com. Then come on back to our website at soundbites.org and check out some of the coolest people around on the forums and all the other good stuff that goes on there. I'm very proud of the folks that are on both my website, Ask Nick, and on Soundbites. I'm pretty impressed by them. They're good people. But now we're going to go back to the phones, and we're going to talk to Joe from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Joe. What's your question?
Hi, guys. How you doing?
Peachy, how are you?
I got a problem. When I go to ScanDisk or Defrag, it comes up, and then ScanDisk will start running, and then it shuts off because after 10 times it says it's not doing
nothing. Yeah, it timed out.
And then I'll go to Defrag, I'll get it started,
mm-hmm.
and then when I go to the site for details, it's a plain site. It hasn't been... Defragging.
Right.
I usually try to do it once a week.
Now you're doing what? Windows 98, I take it?
Yes.
Yeah. All right, here's the thing. You only need to run the ScanDisk and defrag maybe once every 6 months. Unless you're moving a heck of a lot of files off and on that computer, you know, you don't need to run it that often.
It overdrives the hard drive and wears the hard drive out.
And
faster.
Second, you should be doing it in safe mode. We have been saying for a number of years now, if you're going to run Disfrag or ScanDisk and with Windows 98, you have to run it in safe mode.
So it shuts down the other programs. The ScanDisk and Defrag can't run because there's other programs already running.
So go to safe mode if I want to run it.
Yeah,
right.
And you only need to do it maybe once every 6 months, if that. Unless, like I say, you're moving one heck of a lot of programs in and off that computer... It's just a waste of time.
So that's why it isn't running at all, then?
Because you're not running it in safe mode.
Right.
There's other programs running, so it can't.
Have a good Father's Day.
You too. We're going to take another quick break, but we're going to be back in just a couple of minutes. And, yes, you know who's coming back. It's Dave Enright. It's Steve Ray. It's Brendan Cooper. And it's me, Nick Francesco. And we will be bringing you more folks on the line. We've got some folks on the line. And we'll be talking about some more stuff, answering some more of your questions on this Father's Day edition of Soundbites. Only on 1180 WHAM.
Your questions for over 15 years. It's Soundbites with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on News Radio 1180 WHAM.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Brendan Cooper.
And we're going to take Sam from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Sam. What's your question? Sam, are you there?
I'm here. Afternoon, guys.
Hi there.
Good afternoon. Just up till yesterday, I use three browsers, Internet Explorer, Opera, and Mozilla. Mm-hmm. I'm getting the family to finally use the other two not-so-famous ones.
Mm-hmm.
And in the course of Mozilla, I've always been able to use the video of, like, CNN and,
right.
and everything. And up till yesterday, I used RealPlayer. I have all the media player. I have Windows Media Player, but it's only taking Windows Media Player now, and I'm wondering how do I – I'm trying to look for in Mozilla a choice, and it doesn't seem to give me one in the tools under options of to use Windows Media Player.
It's under the file extension.
It's in the helper programs. It's not in the browser.
It's not right. – the choice to make for that is in the help.
No, the help. There's a list of helper programs. So when you're on a website and it pops up a WMV, it will use Windows Media Player. If it pops up an RA, it uses Real Audio. If it pops up an MOV, it uses QuickTime.
Right. I don't use Mozilla itself. I use Firefox. But if you go to the options, one of the choices is file types on that screen, and it says automatically perform the associated action with each of the following file types. And there's open widths and open widths and open widths. And
yes.
Apparently, and then there's a plugins button that will let you play with the plugins.
And one of the quick fixes for that is to reinstall RealPlayer, and it makes itself the default.
I've done that, and can't seem to get it to be the default player.
Then go into that browser and change it manually.
Yeah, that's kind of what you're going to have to do. I'm sorry, we are completely out of time. It's the LPG update coming up next. On your sports leader, we're going to be back next week with Dave Enright, Steve Ray. Maybe it'll be Brendan Cooper. Maybe it'll be Rob Linton. Maybe it'll be some completely unknown individual. But we'll be back here next week on the greatest computer show in the known universe, Soundbites on 1180 WHAM.